September 11, 2001 brought confrontation between law enforcement and American Muslims. Followers of Islam say the government is alienating them with practices that amount to ethnic or religious profiling. In New Jersey, though, authorities and Muslims are reaching out to each other. New Jersey is a key state in relations between these two groups because it's home to one of the country's largest Arab American populations, and several of the suicide hijackers lived there for a time. NPR's Jennifer Ludden has the first of an occasional series of reports on civil liberties post 9/11.
In a cavernous indoor sports complex in central New Jersey, hundreds of families celebrate a Muslim festival. Children clamber over gym sets and spin around in bumper cars while parents chat over picnic lunches. And off to one side, Sergeant Joe Griffin of the New Jersey State Police quietly works the crowd.
Do you know when you want us to come now, or you have to check?
If you want, I mean, I could talk to the members and then you guys could come next Tuesday.
A young college woman wants Griffin to talk to her local Muslim Student Association. Griffin taps the date into his Palm Pilot. Then he reaches into a cardboard box of freebies and hands the woman a keychain with a dangling plastic police car. Sergeant Griffin says he's making up his job as he goes. He admits the police had virtually no interaction with the Muslim community before, and that has bred deep mistrust toward law enforcement. As a black man, Griffin can relate.
The struggle is very similar, in my view. What the Muslim community is going through now is just similar to during the civil rights movement. I mean, it's just a different time and a different place.
Griffin puts in nights and weekends, speaking at Islamic schools, mosques, and recently at Arab churches. One man who's come to trust him is Muhammad Yunus, head of New Jersey's American Muslim Union. A few months after 9/11, Yunus says his wife, who wears a headscarf, was driving on the highway when four teenagers began taunting her.
Just started making all kind of signs with their fingers and all this, and they started calling name and all that, and they came in her car and they threw something.
Yunus isn't sure what they threw. Sergeant Griffin thinks it was ketchup. Yunus's wife noted the license plate number, and Yunus phoned Griffin.
He knew they were kids, he knew they were young, and he said he didn't want to try to file any charges against them, but he just wanted an opportunity to sit with these young people and explain to them who they were.
Griffin tracked the driver through the tag number. Then, after some cajoling, he coordinated the schedules of the teenagers and their parents and the lawyer one parent insisted on bringing. When they finally sat down, Muhammad Yunus gestured to his wife and said, "Meet your terrorist." He told the kids his wife was a doctor and they shouldn't judge strangers.
I say, I've been in this country more than you've been. You're 17 or 16 years old. I've been 34 years in this country. That means I have interest in this country more than you did. And I add to this country more than you did. They really felt bad.
Yunus now works with Griffin and has taken a lead in urging Muslims to cooperate with law enforcement. But he says each small success is challenged as the Bush administration expands its domestic war on terror. One activist estimates that a quarter of New Jersey's 300,000 Arabs have been questioned by federal agents. That's easy to believe after just a short time at the FBI field office in Newark.
Hello, FBI Newark.
A special agent takes notes as a caller relates suspicions about an Arab acquaintance. The agent asks, how did he speak out against the U.S.?
Okay.
Was he negative about U.S. culture or policy? The caller tells of trips to the Middle East.
Okay, so this wasn't one continuous trip then. Okay, these are separate trips. Okay. And did he travel with the same gentleman?
The FBI's Newark office gets an average of 50 such calls a day from both Arab Americans and others, says Ed Dixon, the assistant special agent in charge.
We get tips. Neighbors calling neighbors. We get tips about schools. We get tips about suspicious activity regarding vehicles and airports and tunnels. We get a lot of tips, which is good because it kind of shows us that community, they're looking, they're vigilant, they're calling these things in.
Given the history of terrorists taking cover in New Jersey, Dixon says his agents are obliged to follow up on every tip. In addition, there's a steady stream of counter-terror directives from Washington. It often means knocking on someone's home door at night or showing up unannounced at their office, and often the interrogations produce nothing. Dixon knows this is unsettling to the Arab American community. Like New Jersey State Police, he's brought in Muslim leaders to conduct training sessions, telling agents it's rude to shake hands with a Muslim woman, but polite to take off one's shoes before entering a home. Dixon has even sent agents to career day fairs in mosques, hoping to recruit Muslims, or at least convince them not to be afraid of the agency.
I think the ultimate goal is for somebody in the community to pick up the phone late one night and say, there's five guys here. I've never seen them before. They're acting strangely. You guys may want to check it out. Because that's the call that's going to stop the next act.
But getting that call may not be easy. And the first to admit it is Sarah El-Shazly, an Arab-American Muslim.
We really pretty much protect our own by not saying something bad about someone outside. And it just comes from the culture. That's how we were raised.
The New Jersey police recruited El-Shazly to work with Sergeant Griffin after 9/11. On her desk, she keeps an 8x10 framed photo of the World Trade Center, where she and her husband had their first date. El-Shazly says she's now in the delicate position of explaining law enforcement and the Muslim community to each other. It's not easy, she says, with deadpan understatement. El-Shazly considers most Americans amazingly tolerant, yet she wears a headscarf and finds herself deflecting rude stares and nasty comments. When it comes to understanding closed Arab society, she says you have to understand the importance of keeping up appearances.
Our major weight in life is what other people are going to say about us. And we're very proud, especially the Arab community, very proud. We come from rich heritage. We're proud, you know. And that. So it was hard for us to face the fact that we have bad people and say something bad about them. And if you're very religious, you'll also view it as some kind of a treason. You don't speak against your own. It's a sin.
El-Shazly says it's not that most people know something about potential terrorists and don't share it. It's that they don't want to know. They keep their head down, ears closed. She says some are beginning to realize this is counterproductive, that it makes the community look suspicious. But on her visits to mosques, she's amazed that many still think her a traitor or spy.
I've been accused once that I went in there to get the approval of the mosque to attack Iraq.
Non-citizens are most wary. At one recent meeting, Muslim leaders wanted to know if an illegal immigrant calls in to report a hate crime or offer a tip, would police turn them in to immigration officials? Sergeant Joe Griffin said he'd get back to them on that, but he thinks the answer is no. Many Arab Americans here do applaud the outreach effort, but they complain it misses the point. The problem, they say, is counter-terrorism policy, and they find it humiliating and discriminatory. After evening prayers at the Islamic Center of Passaic County, young boys play Nerf ball while their parents socialize. Almost everyone's got a story. Mahmoud Karkis says last winter his truck broke down on the Jersey Turnpike, but when he called 911 to get it towed, three cop cars showed up instead.
And he asked a lot of questions. Okay? Where you came from, where you going, how long you been in this country, your kids, how many kids you have, wife, you know, a lot of questions.
3 hours of questions, keeping Karkis shivering in the cold till 2 a.m., Another man says soon after 9/11, he was jailed 23 days with no explanation. He's a civil engineer and suspects he was deemed a threat because he had a project on the Queensboro Bridge. A year and a half after the terror attacks, worshippers here say instead of getting better, the situation for Muslims in America threatens to get worse. A foreign visitor registration system is causing a new round of detentions and deportations. Legislation being drafted by the Justice Department could further expand surveillance powers beyond the USA Patriot Act. And then there's the recent report that the FBI is tallying the number of mosques in each district. Activist Magdi Mahmoud says that's generated some conspiracy theories.
Some people think that this is just a move so the Muslim community will be more scared and less participant in the public activities. Some people think it's a hint from the government to let the people know that they are not wanted in this country and they are better to leave.
Immigration lawyer Sohel Mohammed complains that during interrogations, federal agents frequently ask, how many times a day do you pray?
And if that has any relationship with terrorism, I want to know. What we do know is the 19 hijackers were frequenting go-go bars. How come that question is never asked if you happen to go to go-go bars? I mean, I just want to know.
The FBI's Ed Dixon insists counterterror efforts are not based on religious or ethnic profiling, and he feels fear of the government in many cases is overblown. Dixon says he was stunned and saddened after he spoke about the agency's work at a recent Muslim gathering. A 12-year-old boy came up and asked him, "Does this mean you're going to spy on my family?" In a strange way, though, Dixon sees the many complaints as a sign that relations between Arab Americans and law enforcement have improved.
You know, years ago, they may not have been comfortable in doing that. Years ago, they probably would not have had anybody as a point of contact to pick up and call. Well, now they do.
Back at the Muslim holiday celebrations, one middle-aged man doesn't think calling the police would help. He gives his name only as Saif, and he says his neighbors once yelled at his kids to go home, stupid Arabs. One day in Kmart, a woman told his wife she should be ashamed to be Muslim. Then there was the attempt at vacation.
Well, we went to Poconos, for example, on a getaway weekend, my wife and I, and they sat us on a table, couples. So, of course, we did not take the kids.
Saif says his wife wears a headscarf, and the other couple barely looked at her, much less spoke with her.
It's just hilarious. She says, honey, next time we're not going to have dinner here. Let's have the dinner in our suite.
Saif, his wife, and their four children are all American citizens. Yet 8 months ago, he moved his family to Jordan. He plans to join them, but is not giving up all ties.
We have our house still here, and we're not selling it, but I'm going to rent it, see what's going on, because I would love to, you know, come back and live where I belong, here. That's where we belong.
Saif worries that a U.S. war with Iraq will bring new retaliation against Arab Americans, and in this, he echoes the fears of Police Sergeant Joe Griffin. No doubt, Griffin says, it will set us back. So, with a touch of urgency, Griffin plans more meetings and makes new contacts, knowing they may soon be tested. Jennifer Ludden, NPR News, Paterson, New Jersey.